Knowledge fire.
And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy and Kansas. Stop it. Andy and Kansas. Andy, it's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan?
Jordan.
Quick question.
Uh-huh.
What's your bright spot this?
You go first.
This day. I will tell you right now, I am going obviously stir crazy along with everybody else.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
Part of the way I expressed that was
watching the film Stir Crazy.
Actually,
Stir Fry.
Cabin Fever.
Okay.
No, I purchased Cabin chocolate Boy. Lucky Charms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which are absolutely horrific. They're basically Cocoa Krispies with marshmallows, and it's horrific.
Well,
however, if you put them in some yogurt, black cherry yogurt specifically.
Interesting.
Incredible.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible.
Interesting.
Delicious.
Complementary flavor profiles.
Yeah, it's very strange, but it works out.
Well, here's what I would say.
What's that?
That's not a good sign.
No.
That sort of a purchase is a little iffy. But
not good.
You won't be in a crisis unless you get that Captain Crunch cotton candy.
No, that can't be done.
There is a cotton candy boxes of Captain Crunch that
cannot
I've seen.
Be done.
And if you buy one of those, you got
it's time to call it.
You need to get help.
Yeah. It's time to call it.
Uh-huh. Well, that, I don't know. I guess the bright spot is the yogurt pairing with it, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll allow it.
It was a terrible purchase that turned out to be a positive one.
Here's my bright spot,
yes,
Jordan.
Yes, sir.
I believe.
You believe?
That the year of the seltzer is more than just drinking seltzer.
Okay.
I believe
what
the
do you
year
got?
Of the seltzer is something that is aspirational for all of us.
Okay.
I believe that as we embark on this adventure of drinking a bunch of seltzer,
sure.
What we need to do is we need to look at it as a metaphor. We need to look at it as a thing where, hey, look, we all like soda. Soda's delicious. But you know what? You can do better. You can have a seltzer water.
Yeah.
You can take away the calories.
Sure.
In a number of cases, you can take away the caffeine if
absolutely.
You don't want caffeine.
Don't need it.
There are many ways that we can break the chains that bind us into unhealthy habits.
Yeah.
And so the year of the seltzer marches on. I have an update.
Okay.
I have an update on what in the spirit of aspiration surrounding the year of the seltzer that is this 2020.
Yeah.
I am making a commitment that I am going to drink 500 different seltzers in this year.
There aren't even 500 different seltzers.
Absolutely
there are not 500 different seltzers.
I have not looked it up, but I guarantee
you're
going
to have to order some from Japan.
You bet I am. You bet I am. And I'm willing to do it.
Fair enough. I recuse myself.
It is more than one a day, which is going to be tough.
Okay.
I'm setting the parameters as 420 is the beginning of it.
Sure.
So 420, 2021 will be the end of the year of the seltzer.
Sure.
So we had on our...
You're going with the fiscal year as opposed to...
the pothead fiscal year.
Yeah.
So on our last episode, we discussed the AHA Black Cherry Coffee.
Indeed.
That's number one. That's the first seltzer of the year.
Right.
And I have two new ones to bring. I decided that AHA had inspired confidence.
Sure.
Among me. So I got their orange grapefruit.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Okay.
And then I went to the store and I saw that La Croix had a new flavor, Limoncello, which I'll now be testing
on air.
All right.
Try it out.
It's pretty good. It's not great. Ooh, that's interesting. It has like a lemon vanilla kind of vibe.
Right. That's
almost a lemon.
Limoncello
pudding.
Is a cake, right?
No, I think it's some alcohol.
Like okay.
It's a booze.
Okay. I don't know.
It's like an aperitif or something like that.
Okay.
It's one of those like dessert boozes.
All right.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drink 500 different seltzers, and I'm going to give them a score.
Do you have a spreadsheet?
I have a notebook here.
Okay, all right.
And I'm eventually this will end up having to be in a spreadsheet.
I was going to say, yeah.
And if any of you listening out there want to make it, I will be giving updates on every episode of the new Seltzers and their ratings.
All right.
Out of 100, I've decided. Now, the scale will obviously become more refined as time goes on.
Sure, sure.
But I have given the AHA Black Cherry Coffee an 83 out of 100.
Holy shit, we're there.
Well, that's a good rating.
Okay.
If it's under 50, that means it's bad.
Yes. Yeah,
over 50 is good.
Okay.
And I think that I probably elevated that one a little higher than it needs to be, but I think it was out of surprise.
Opening seltzer, though.
Yeah.
It's got that first bump, you know, where you're like, this is the one that also I embark on my journey with.
And it's really hard to uncouple from the, like, oh my God, this was so much better than I thought it was going
to be. Right.
So that's tough. But 83, I'm going to stand by it. Maybe by September, November, we'll be looking back on that. I can't believe that was
83.
We may regret it, but whatever. Orange grapefruit, AHA, given a 72. 72 out of 100.
Not as good.
But it also wasn't, there wasn't any oomph to it. There wasn't any surprise
to it.
And I found myself leaving the can. Like, I didn't drink at all.
Ooh.
And by the time I got to the bottom of it, it wasn't like ice cold, and it really suffered.
Okay.
It was very tough.
In that case, I think 73 is high.
72.
72.
I too think 73 is too high.
Fair point.
La Croix Limoncello, we will have a rating by the end of this episode. I'm unclear on it.
Not yet. No. Got to finish it before it can be done.
You're the seltzer.
Okay. All right. This is stir crazy.
This is very exciting to me. I am very pumped. So, Jordan, we got an episode to go over today. It'll be very interesting. There's a rapid cycling of Alex's emotional state as we discuss April 21st and 22nd, 2020. Okay. I'm Dan. This is 2020.
God damn it.
But before we get down to business, I'd like to take a little moment to say thank you to some folks who have signed up and are supporting the show and making the year of the seltzer possible.
All right.
So first, Frank. Thank you, Frank. Need you, Frank. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Next, Laura. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Next, Travis. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Travis.
Thank you, Travis. Next, Russell. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Russell.
Thank you, Russell. Next, Christine with a K. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Christine. Next, David. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, David.
And Ultimate Salt Dragon. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Ultimate Salt Dragon.
Not one of these, like, iffy salt dragons. Ultimate. And then finally, I'd like to say thank you to a couple people who donated on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, Edward, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. Tinker's Dam, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Aaron, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right?
Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large.
I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Edward. Thank you so much, Tinker's Dam. And thank you so much, Aaron.
Yes, thank you very much to all three of you.
If you're out there listening, you're thinking, hey, I enjoy the show, would like to support these gents too, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show, or you could find a local charity in your area and help provide support for folks in need in your communities.
Yes, we would be very grateful if you did either.
Indeed. Jordan?
Yes, sir.
We can't start the episode yet. There's more business.
There's the year of the seltzer?
No. The year of the seltzer update has been made.
Okay.
But we there's a little more business need to take care of.
Sure.
First thing is that we're recording this on Thursday, and this is the day that Alex's bankruptcy hearing was supposed to happen.
Yep.
And we don't know exactly what's going to happen, because by the time we've started this episode, if we consult the docket, this morning, Alex's ex-wife filed an emergency motion. She's trying to get Alex's lawyer disqualified.
Sure.
On the basis that she says and asserts that the two of them have an existing relationship from back when she and Alex were married.
Right.
And
right,
it
should
preclude him from representing him in this case.
That's fair. Bring Barnes back.
Oh, no. So there's that order or motion that she's filed. And failing that, she would like the a motion to continue the hearing, which would be to postpone it.
Sure.
So there's a very decent chance that by the time We're done recording, or by the time this episode comes out, the hearing may be postponed.
Sure.
Or it's also possible that that motion will be rejected and the hearing will happen.
Right.
It's unclear, and I apologize if anybody feels like we misled anyone. We did not. We were going on the information that was available, and this morning, Thursday morning, this emergency motion was filed.
Yeah.
So we have no idea. There may not be a satisfying payoff this week, but we will end up finding out.
Goddamn Jones family.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a bummer, but the other bit of business is a little bit more of a nice thing. It is my birthday, and
absolutely happy birthday to
you.
Dan.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to just take a moment to say thank you to some folks who have sent nice things and presents. So Sonia from Sweden, Raptor Princess Extraordinaire, not from Switzerland.
Right.
I need to apologize for that publicly. That slip up. I'd like to thank her and Black Dragon Queen Christy for sending very nice little gifts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Also, Kelly, need to say thank you. Heard me talking about how I don't have a Netflix password and gifted me a Netflix account.
Well, so, that's wonderful.
Yeah, thank
now
you very much
to Kelly.
Now you
can catch up on Tiger King.
I unfortunately have not been able to open it yet because I haven't had time, but I intend to soon once I have a little bit more free time.
Sure.
Also, you, Jordan. You gave me a copy of Final Fantasy VII that and was... demanded that I play it.
Yes.
So thank you very much for
and
that.
It was not your bright spot, so...
Well, I haven't really had a whole lot of time to get into it yet.
I
did play a tiny bit last night before I went to bed, and I don't... It's not my style of game, but I definitely enjoyed the opening of it.
Yeah.
So I think gorgeous. I'll probably enjoy it, but it'll take a little adjustment.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And then finally, my friend Adrian got me a very nice spruce beer. It's a brand called Le Petit. From what I understand, it is a favorite of the Quebecois.
Okay.
In Canada.
Uh-huh.
And so we have here a little bit of a spruce beer. I have no idea what that means. I have
me
no
neither.
Idea what to expect. But
cheers
salut.
To you.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
That has a gingerish vibe
it
to it.
It does. It does. It also has, I feel pine needles. Have you ever eaten a pine needle? I feel a pine needle.
I'm not sure I've ever eaten a pine needle, but I feel like I have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I feel like I just
This almost
did.
Feels like it should qualify as part of the year of the seltzer.
It kind
of
does.
It's quite fizzy.
It is very fizzy.
It's not very beer-like.
No, not at all.
When I was pouring it, I noticed that it had almost like a champagne-y vibe.
Yeah.
And there is that sort of cleanness.
And it's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have... It's very much seltzer ish
adjacent.
Yes.
Anyway, good, nice. So thank you, Adrian. That's very delish.
Yeah, it's quite refreshing.
Uh huh. So now let's get down to business on our episode. All that business taken care of, and many thank yous and good tidings to all.
Yes.
Here is an out of context drop from today's show.
They're coming for your balls.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So,
all right.
Alex seems to be focusing quite a bit on the idea that the coronavirus is specifically designed to attack men's balls.
I'm fair. I'm happy with that.
Cool. So we start here on the 21st, and Alex is still mad at Joy Behar and The View because they have said that people who are going out to these protests against quarantines and stay-at-home measures are terrorists. And Alex is not happy about this.
Here's Joy Behar.
Right. These people are being egged on by right-wing media and people like Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh. And why are you bringing guns to a rally? You want to call yourself protesters? Leave your guns home. Those are terrorists who bring guns to things, to rallies. I don't trust that at all. And don't listen to these people. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
What did Thomas Jefferson say? And it was paraphrased in Viva Vendetta. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny.
First of all, I don't 100% agree with Joy Behar. I don't think that it's necessarily an appropriate thing to say, like, oh, you're bringing a gun to a protest. That's a terrorist thing to do.
Sure.
Because you can easily see how that could be applied in all sorts of directions.
For sure.
You don't want
sure.
it to be applied
for
in.
For sure.
And just having a gun or just carrying a gun isn't necessarily
absolutely
some sort of a terrorist act. Now, bigger picture, This should surprise no one, but that is not a Thomas Jefferson quote.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's commonly misattributed to Jefferson as well as to Thomas Paine, but Monticello, the world's foremost authority on the words and writings of Thomas Jefferson, have found no evidence that Jefferson ever said that. In researching the source of this quotation, the Thomas Jefferson Encyclopedia reports that the first known appearance of this in print was in 1914 in an indictment of socialism delivered by John Basil Barnhill, a prominent anti-socialist debater of the time. Interestingly, it's currently Barnhill's birthday, so happy birthday to him as well as me.
Hey, how about that?
We share a birthday. This quote comes from a debate Barnhill had with socialist writer Henry Tichenor. And in the context of the debate, it's very clear that Barnhill is not quoting or citing an existing expression. Those are his own words.
Good work, Barnhill.
It wasn't until 1994 that this quote was first repackaged and presented as the words of Thomas Jefferson in a book called It's All in the Game, Butterflies, Mind Control, The Razor's Edge. This book was written by a guy...
Is that William Somerset Maugham?
No. It was written by a guy named Giorgio Ciris Hatton, which is a name that most people would not recognize, but because I did a thorough breakdown of Alex's film Endgame, that name rings a bell for me. Giorgio Ciris Hatton is the guy who was one of the big sources for Daniel Estulin's book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, which Alex uses as a cornerstone of his theories about that group. Hatton, of course, is not a reliable source. Here's how Hatton describes himself. Quote, I am Giorgio Ciris Hatton, Commander-in-Chief, Earth Project Transition, Pleiades Sector Flight Command, Intergalactic Federation Fleet, Ashtar Command, Earth Representative to the Cosmic Council and the Intergalactic Federation Council on Earth Transition.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Is that the Dutchman?
It could be. Hatton is a nutty space weirdo who also sell at certain points. I'm not sure what he's up to now, but he used to at least sell colloidal silver.
Of course.
And in a book he wrote in 1994, he took this old quote from an anti-socialist debate and reintroduced it as a quote from Thomas Jefferson. It's not a Jefferson quote, but since that point, people have regularly misattributed it to him. Again, this is Alex Jones having no actual connection to history or the founding fathers of this country he professes to love so much. He doesn't love this country or actual history. He loves completely nonsensical conspiracy theory, revisionist history, and what he generously calls patriot lore. In other words, he's living a fantasy land.
He loves his founding fathers who bear no resemblance to the actual ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so obvious when you look at like the quotations that he uses.
Yeah.
So Alex here in this next clip, I think he realizes that on his previous day's episode on the 20th, David Icke was on and he said there was no virus.
Right.
And Alex was like, bingo, you got it.
Yeah.
I think he realized that by this point that was like, that's a problem for me.
Now, there's a big paradox here between people like David Knight, Mike Adams, David Icke, and others who argue with each other and get mad at each other over different angles of this, when it's completely normal with the government and the media that's been caught lying to us so much over and over again to question everything, and that's healthy, and you should do it. I don't agree with David Icke that virus science isn't basically real.
Shouldn't need to say that, but okay.
95% of what he's saying, I can prove and know is right, and he has a lot of courage, and so I loved having him on. We don't have one view like CNN or MSNBC and then parrot it.
No, you affirm all views and then pretend that you didn't.
Yeah.
It's fine to have David Icke on and saying that, like, hey, there is no virus, but your response needs to be, what are you talking about? Like, you can't just be like, oh, my God, bingo, you nailed it.
Yeah.
They have to have a fake virus so they know how it goes.
Yeah.
And then later be like, hey, we just hear all sides on this show, man.
Yeah.
No big deal.
The problem was not David Icke's views.
No.
It was Alex's response to David Icke's views.
It's not that you allow him to say these things. It's that you double down on them and then pretend that you didn't.
Like, No, totally right.
Yeah.
Just like how Fox News is trying to be like, what are you talking about? We didn't say nothing about hydrochloroquine. What are you? Well, you guys are crazy.
Yeah. Alex is on his smooth transition towards that same walking back.
Yeah.
He's just now sort of being like, let's not bring it up.
It's so disgusting that none of them will be held accountable for it. It's just disgusting.
Yep. And in another retcon of things that Alex has definitely done, he's now like really firmly of the position that those videos that were coming out of China mm-hmm. that he was reporting on as being totally real are now obviously fake acting.
Okay, of course.
China executes you if you put a video out they don't like. They shot all these videos that were the worst acting I've seen since watching third graders do Peter Pan. You ever been to a third grade school thing of Peter Pan? They're better actors than this. Almost all of it was staged. You'll have two or three people fall down together in the street at the same time. The welding shut. It was fake. It was garbage. Almost all of it was not real.
So those are all things that he has reported as very real in the past.
Sure.
Also, I think the only reason I kept that in is because the only time Alex would ever be at a third grade play is like his kids.
Yeah.
And he's using that as an example of bad acting. Can't feel good.
Oh, you don't like dad whenever he says your play sucks. Yeah. Nobody likes dad anymore because he told you your play is shit.
I'm just trying to be supportive, telling you suck at acting.
Nobody cares about, let dads talk. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah.
So Alex has this other thing that he does from time to time. Like, he'll often talk about how his website's being, like, it's under hack attack stuff like that. Just trying to, like, really escalate the tension.
Yeah.
He does that on this April 21st episode, but it's like, this is absolutely did not happen.
There's about a minute left on this report. It's at man.video. Our video streams are down. They told us that at the data center, the cable was cut, the fiber optic, so... Who knows what's happening there? A lot of stuff going on. We still got the audio streams going and the satellite feeds to TV and radio stations. So stay with us and spread those links.
There is no follow-up on this. The fiber optic cords have been cut.
Somebody snuck in.
Someone at the data center has informed us that the fiber optic cords have been cut. All right,
actually,
Alex.
Our website is under Shaq Attack, and Shaq actually cut our fiber optic cable.
Look,
really
I contacted the data center, and they said that Ethan Hunt just came in through the roof and downloaded a virus into the system that only attacks GCN feeds of Alex Jones's show.
Exactly.
Okay.
Ving Rhames was involved.
Yeah. There was an Italian job situation at the shortwave station. This reminds me
back
a lot
when of Emilio Estevez was still an actor.
This reminds me a lot of Bill Cooper too. Honestly, there's another thing that I'm going to cover eventually in the future. But there is like a number of times throughout Bill's career, that he has insisted that like he's specifically under attack.
Of course,
and so that's something that also it's just sort of there's a rich tradition among conspiracy theory type broadcasters to create sort of dramatic arcs around because you have to create the presentation that what you're doing is somehow dangerous.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to manufacture a danger.
Yeah.
Our fiber optic thing is being cut.
Carrie is under attack by aliens.
Scalar attacks.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Whenever there's any tech glitches, it's because aliens are interfering.
Yeah.
It's very consistent. Meanwhile, if we have tech glitches, it's because my stuff's not that good. My soundboard is a little old. We're talking into cheap mics.
Still haven't gotten that compressed air yet.
I did. I just need to do it again. So Alex is pretty mad that the media, the evil media.
Oh, all those bad guys.
They've said that he has the cure to the virus or something. Or they've said that he's said that he has the cure. So Alex, in this next clip, is complaining about how his friends and family believe that the media says that he said it, so they're asking him for the cure.
Sure.
This is convoluted, but the thing that's important is that, like, you have to recognize so many of these complaints that Alex has trace back to him having conversations with stupid people he chooses to associate with.
Yeah.
So it's like... You can't generalize this to the population.
Yeah.
These are your people.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw the news. Jones claims he has a cure to COVID-19 and a treatment. Never said that. Never said anything close to that.
Steve Pachenik did.
But they still run that headline everywhere. Until I've got cousins and people calling going, Alex, do you really have a cure? You're a moral guy.
Buckley?
Do you have it? I want it. And I'm like, no, I don't have it. Well, the news says you do. See, people that know me, but don't really listen a lot, they know I'm a good guy, so they're calling me old friends, old college buddies, old girlfriends. oh, my God, my mom, you know, she's old. Do you have the cure? And I'm like, no, but the news says you have it. See, they trust the media so little that they think I've really got a cure when the media says I do, because they trust me, not them. But see, that's the level of deception.
Doesn't it mean that they trust the media more if they believe the people saying that Alex says that he has a cure?
Yes.
If they distrusted the media, then they would think that Alex isn't saying that he has a cure.
Exactly.
I don't know what's going on here.
Don't worry about
it. It's not really important.
Steve Pachanek cured COVID-19. That's all you need to know.
But he didn't say that he has the cure.
No.
He just said that he did cure
himself.
That's
true. That's true. He was the first person to cure it,
yeah. And
as well as have it, I think.
Yeah, he was patient zero.
Yeah.
No, patient one or whatever, because he got it from meeting with a Chinese national.
That's
a student of some sort, I believe, is what he said. I don't care. It's all nonsense.
Me neither.
But the point here is that so many of these things that seem to make Alex mad are just dumb people and his family members talking to him. Or imagined conversations, because
this may not even happen. Yeah, this is made up.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Alex talks about his custody situation a little bit. And we don't talk about that a bunch because interpersonal things are impossible to decipher from the information that we have
at
our disposal. But the reason that I'm playing this clip is because Alex says that there's that, and then there's bigger things that he can't discuss. Mm-hmm. And I would suspect that we have a pretty fine idea of what that might be.
Yeah.
Please pray for us, because there's stuff a lot bigger than this I can't tell you about. And they've said, it's your final warning. Leave Bill Gates alone. Leave this alone. Back down. Or the SWAT team's coming. And it's not a pissing contest. It's not that I'm Mr. Badass or anything. I said, do your worst. Piss up a rope. Fill your hand. I will never abandon ship. Ever.
You said you were moving yesterday.
The ship won't sink beneath me. So let me just explain to listeners. We're at DEFCON 5.
So when he says, like, I've gotten my final warning, it's like, it's either nothing or he knows a shoe is coming.
A shoe
is flying directly at his face.
He also made, yet again, a classic mistake of not understanding that DEFCON means the higher the number means the safer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I've not looked into DEFCON ratings.
DEFCON 1, scary. Everybody's going to die. Hmm. DEFCON 5, we're pretty fine.
I you know what? That's... unfortunate for him, but I probably would make the same mistake.
It's a very common mistake.
Yeah.
And it's also their fault for doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. You did it backwards. You guys are stupid.
So whatever the reality is or whatever's behind this, there is a real sense that Alex is just like fucking done.
Yeah.
Like there's a finality to this. I've gotten my last warning. Leave Bill Gates alone.
Yeah.
No one fucking said that to
Nobody
you.
Nobody said
no
that.
One, Bill Gates doesn't care if you talk about it. I would assume he's used to it at this point.
Yeah.
But it just goes on throughout this episode. Like it's real serious. Just the way he feels like I've come to the end.
And I don't say that to go, oh, we're victims. Oh, poor us. No, man, I'm just telling you, we're in damn foxholes. It's like the Alamo. And we're sending letters out, you know, on the back of wallpaper saying, help, we're about to be overrun by a group 10 times our size. But
we need to conquer Mexico.
Get this out. I'm just letting you know, man, final dispatches. These should be final dispatches. Now, hopefully we go another 6 months, a year, 2 years. Hopefully sanity comes back in. We turn this around somehow. But I want to explain something to you. We're not in a normal period anymore.
Alex has always seen himself as Colonel Travis.
Yeah.
He's always seen himself as this archetype of the guy going down in Alamo, in the Alamo.
Yeah.
And here he is on air saying, like, these are the final dispatches. These could be the final dispatches.
Right.
You know, we're in the Alamo. We're sending out. We need reinforcements. And guess what? In the Alamo, those reinforcements did not come.
And just like Colonel Travis, Alex is a drunk moron.
Yes, and so, he brought this upon himself.
Exactly. He is more accurate about being Colonel Travis than he knows.
Yeah. So Alex gets off this sort of real doomed feeling that he has to talk about Owen Schroyer had this this rally over last weekend.
Sure.
And it turns out they're doing another one this weekend. But
I hope they get infected.
At the last one, you didn't know this.
I didn't know.
You don't know anything about this, but it turns out Antifa was there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Antifa tried to agent provocateur Owen's protest.
Of course.
And here is what happened.
You know what happened? Owen Schroyer showed up at about 12 noon on Saturday at the state capitol. And normally you had to have a permit to be up at the front of the capitol, so he did it down on the street. They had a couple provocateur Antifa dressed up in American flag outfits. We know who they are. Tried to start a fight with cops. The state police saw right through it. Didn't even arrest them. Just shoved them to the side and said, Owen, we can't control this down here. We appreciate what you're doing. So does the governor. This is off record, but on record. They should want to say their names.
What?
Please come up in front of the Capitol and we'll protect you from
it. Shut the fuck up.
We'll protect. Okay, so that's the Fight Club stuff that's going on here in America.
So, yeah, Alex knows who these Antifa dressed up in American flag outfits, agent provocateuring Owen's protest. Yeah.
I do believe the governor supports him because they're all insane, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Abbott and Dan Patrick are
just absolutely insane. Yeah.
Whoa.
No, I mean, it is they're
really begging the state to go blue.
There is no there is no moral way that these guys, if they believe in Christianity, they are damning themselves to hell more than anyone ever has. It's insane.
Whew. Yeah, that state government had some problems.
They're great.
They should have elected fucking Kinky Friedman. I don't know what he was running for, but they should have put him in.
Yeah, just toss him in there.
Yeah, get Kinky in for...
There is nobody who could do a worse job than what they are doing right now.
Yeah.
It's bad.
So you got this protest that's coming up on Saturday, and Alex is really trying to push that you got to go or you're with the enemy.
Sure.
We don't need Americans to think of it as extraordinary to go out and demonstrate in the face of this tyranny, in the face of this fear. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. We need everyone to realize if you don't go out and demonstrate, if you don't go out and get over your fear, then you're dead already and you're part of the enemy operation. It's either you demonstrate and you say no or you're with the enemy. It's not, oh, Alex Jones and Owen Schroyer are so great. Boy, they went out there and didn't wear masks. Don't they have courage?
Hey.
Courage is one word you could use.
Sure.
I suppose.
Sure.
Death wish is another word.
It's not what you like to hear.
Yeah.
It's a bad mentality.
No.
Hey, if you don't go out and protest in large groups without masks on and all that, you're with the enemy.
Yeah. you are with the virus or not.
So speaking of the enemy, Dr. Fauci, enemy.
Sure.
Enemy. Alex has dug up some footage of him from a couple years back, and Alex has decided that this is proof that he planned this whole thing.
Sure.
And that he was trying to fuck with Trump.
And Fauci saying, don't ever shake hands with anyone again. Since when did this space alien from hell land here that ran the HIV cover up and the anthrax cover up and all these crimes? He's up to his eyeballs in the Wuhan lab.
Real quick, Alex, what is the HIV cover up, according to you? You are an HIV denialist. So what is the HIV cover up exactly? Please explain that. Second, whenever Alex says, he's very consistently saying he's up to his eyeballs and stuff.
Yeah.
And that is a very specific turn of phrase that Francis Boyle uses all the time.
Uh-huh.
He says people are up to their eyeballs in the biohazard labs or the bioweapons labs, the Nazi bioscience.
I like it as an idiom, though. I've used it from time to time. I think it's a great one.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But Alex is using it very consistently to talk about Dr. Fauci,
right,
which is Francis Boyle epithet.
Gotcha.
It is very traceable.
Gotcha.
And Bill and Melinda Gates, $100 million from them last year, and now he's here saying, don't shake hands with anyone ever again. Yeah, let's cue this up and play it. Him in 2017 saying Trump will be faced with a major crisis very, very soon. Here it is.
Is that there is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases, both chronic infectious diseases in the sense of already ongoing disease, and we have certainly a large burden of that, but also there will be a surprise outbreak.
And he goes on to say Trump won't be ready for that. These criminals love to brag.
So Alex cut that clip off very strategically.
It did seem very abrupt the way he cut that
almost
off.
Mid-word.
Almost like he took it out of context.
Yeah. Here's the actual clip without that hard out in it.
And if there's one message that I want to leave with you today based on my experience, and you'll see that in a moment, is that there is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases, both chronic infectious diseases in the sense of already ongoing disease, and we have certainly a large burden of that, but also there will be a surprise outbreak. And I hope by the end of my relatively short presentation, you will understand why history, the history of the last 32 years that I've been the director of NIAID, will tell the next administration that there's no doubt in anyone's mind that they will be faced with the challenges that their predecessors were faced with.
This is from a speech that Anthony Fauci gave at Georgetown University Medical Center just before Trump's inauguration. It's very clear if you listen to his comments in context that Fauci is discussing the very normal phenomenon of surprise outbreaks. The fact that Trump will experience a surprise outbreak is not an outlier. It's exactly the same thing that previous presidents like Obama have experienced. It's a fact of life that there will be emerging diseases. There's always outbreaks. The question is entirely about what these emerging diseases are and what the response to those outbreaks will be. By ending the clip where Alex does, he makes the comment appear to be Fauci teasing that Trump, unlike past presidents, has a disease outbreak on the horizon, which now that there is a pandemic going on, could be misrepresented and misinterpreted into him making some kind of a threat. In its proper context, it's shown to Alex's narrative is shown to be a complete mischaracterization of Fauci's words and an example of an absolute fabrication, either knowing or someone's feeding Alex's information. He doesn't vet anything that he says. He just bleh.
Man, I hate it how the media just takes Alex out of context all the time.
You know, yeah,
they
man.
Just take him out of context.
So rude.
Yeah, and you're taking him out of context right here by playing this clip that he took out of context. See, you need to provide the full context Alex saying the clip is completely opposite to what it is that I just said.
If you understand that the proper context of Alex's show is lying is cool, then I am taking him out of context. That is a fair accusation.
There you go.
So in this next clip, Alex talks about the globalists' plans, right? So Trump wants to open up the economy, right?
Sure.
And once he does that, the globalists are going to respond.
And of course, I predicted there'd be a bunch of more deadly mutations because they're releasing them. You see, as soon as Trump tries to reopen, they're going to release more deadly strains. I've already foreseen their whole operation. We'll be right back.
Probably a prophetic dream he's talking about.
Yeah.
So this is one of those really fun things that Alex does where he presents a situation that no matter what happens, he can spin to his advantage. He's saying that once Trump tries to reopen the economy, the evil globalists are going to release more strains of the virus. So let's look at the possible outcomes in the real world and how this narrative is something that works literally regardless of reality.
Yep.
If Trump doesn't open the economy, then this statement is pointless. There's no reason for the then part of it. But that's not a problem for Alex that situation happens.
Matter.
So let's ignore it.
Yeah.
If Trump opens things up prematurely, there's a decent chance that the outcome is that infection numbers will go up. That's a natural result that you'd expect to see, and it's pretty much the big argument against rushing to open things back up.
You would think it's a very obvious argument,
but
apparently we're all stupid.
Yeah. By pretending that the globalists will respond to Trump's action by releasing more dangerous strains of the virus, Alex can rewrite the increased infections as a globalist attack instead of what it really is, the consequence of Trump's shitty leadership. But what if Trump reopens things and there isn't a big increase in infections? That seems unlikely, but it's certainly possible. That would be a problem for Alex, it seems, since he said that the globalists are going to release more bioweapons to punish Trump for reopening the economy.
Sure.
But it's not a problem for Alex, because if that situation comes to pass, then he can say the globalists couldn't follow through with their plans because he called it out on air and foiled their scheme.
Absolutely.
A lot of Alex's narratives work like this. He tends to populate his world with things that can be spun no matter what happens in the real world because he's just making this stuff up to begin with. So,
yep.
That's fun.
Oh, God. Nobody is held accountable on the right. It's simply not a thing. It's just not a thing. Like, they just don't do it. It's fascinating how a large group of people will just believe anything, and then whenever it's done, they just switch it, and they're like, see, I never believed that.
Yeah, bullshit.
Which is, yeah, no, insane.
Yeah. So, Jordan.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this episode, I thanked some people for some nice birthday gifts.
Indeed.
But I got an amazing birthday gift in the middle of this episode.
Okay.
And that is that someone we all thought was dead is shown to be alive.
Don DeGrand Prix?
No, he's still dead.
Damn.
All right, I said I'd open the phones up, and as usual, I haven't gotten your phone calls. We're going
talking to him right now. Let's go ahead and talk to John in Wyoming, and we'll go to Emmanuel in Norway. Thanks for holding, John. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Alex. Let me tell you something that happened here in Sheridan, Wyoming.
Old Man House Phone!
Old Man House Phone returns from the dead!
He lives! John from Wyoming, Old Man House Phone. It's amazing. What a treat.
Oh, my God.
What a gift.
Give him a show. Give him a show. If he's still going after all of that, he's got to have a show after.
Alex offered him a show way back, but he said he can't because he just has a house phone.
No,
that's how we know he's Old Man House Phone.
Give him a show. Give him a show.
John from Wyoming, Old Man House Phone. When I heard that, I almost freaked out. He has some nonsense about passing some bill.
He doesn't have anything important to say. We just need to know he's still alive.
Yes. Yeah. Hearing that voice was a real, like, yes, I'm full again. I'm complete.
We need to have one of those websites.
I'm sure he'd passed.
Yeah.
No, I was almost certain.
We need to have one of those, like, is Abe Vigoda dead websites where it's just Old Man House Phone.
We'll never know, yes, but I can confirm that as of April 21st, he is kicking.
Not dead.
And the other thing, too, is, like, he's much older than that voice suggests.
Yes.
I don't remember his exact age, but he did say it on air at one point. It's something in the, like, 80s or something.
Yeah, great.
He is an old, old man.
Sounds good.
Still kicking.
Sounds great.
Anyway, in this next clip, Alex takes another caller. And this is where everything falls apart on the 21st. This is profound. Like, Alex is just like, fuck you, man. I'm fucking done. Fuck this shit.
No shit.
I hate my own show.
Nice.
This fucking stuff is stupid.
Love it.
I've had about a million things cross my brain that I wanted to bring up. But I'm going to try and condense it down into three things, maybe four, and I'll try and be quick. First one I just wanted to bring up, and I don't think it's too late for you to do this, but I called in maybe 3 years ago, but I had made the suggestion, and I know I'm not trying to put everything on you, but you have to
platform. Oh, I'm probably going to shut InfoWars down soon. I don't like this show anymore. I don't like what we do here. I can't do the show anymore, and it's not due to the pressure. I just can't stand it anymore. I can't look at it. I used to like the show. I hate the show. Every minute on the broadcast is pure torture now. And it's not the Democrats suing me. It's not the globalists. It's not all of it. It's just all. America and the world's going to burn. It needs to burn. We killed too many babies. We're done. We're going to lose.
Wow. That's
that's pretty open and shut.
I fucking hate this show. It's fucking stupid. We all need to burn. Fuck this shit.
I think that's pretty comprehensive too. I think this is the first time Alex and I really, really agree with
each other. Except for the America needs to burn part.
Yeah, except for that part.
His assessment of his own show, yes.
Dead accurate. Yeah. Absolutely.
It sucks.
Oh.
Must be torture to do it.
It's absolute torture. Agreed.
I think that is a new wrinkle a little bit. Even in the times that I've heard him be pretty like dark and like it's never like I hate this show.
Yeah.
That's that one's new.
That one's direct.
Yeah. And it's in response to a caller who likes him, who has a suggestion.
Yeah.
Which seems
a suggestion that he has not yet made.
No, it seems uncalled for. Yeah. Just fuck this. I'm gonna shut this down. I don't even want to do
Love
this.
It.
Yeah. So Alex continues on and he elaborates on this need for America and the world to burn.
Well,
so tell me what I need to do now. Go ahead.
Well, no. I just you
because God just needs to blow the planet up. See, I realize now that's why I feel we need to pay for what we've done. Actually, everybody's in zombie mode now.
You
do. People aren't even alive anymore. The listeners are alive. I feel sorry for you, but. You know, the rest of the public's not, dude. We're on a planet of dumb idiots. We're on a planet of slugs now.
Great. So now Alex is become death.
Yep.
Fuck it. Torch the world. Destroy everybody. I mean, like, obviously, in the same way that Alex like was always this crusader against tyranny, and now he's supporting all these tyrannical moves.
Yeah.
Like, of course, it's so obvious that he is like, back in the day, pretending that he cares about humanity and everybody's so great. And the human spirit that refuses to submit is so wonderful.
Yep.
Humanity is a blessing. Ah, fuck it.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Burn him down.
Yep. My personal arc hasn't gone the way I want it to.
Right.
So everyone must die.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. That's an adult.
Yes. So this caller, he brings up his suggestion, and that is that he thinks that Alex should make some specific shirts. And I'll agree with Alex that this isn't a good suggestion, but the way Alex responds is so fucking funny.
Well, okay, so I brought up the idea, and you thought it was a good idea, but I called in a couple of years ago, and I said, hey, man, you should do some bumper stickers or shirts that say, and I got a couple other points I want to make really quick, too, but I was like, you should maybe do some bumper stickers that say the coming economic collapse is an inside job. So it's probably
no one will buy them. No one cares.
maybe, but
no one cares.
Now, this is what I've been looking for from Alex's callers. This is Bill Cooper. This is where I'm at with this.
Well,
fuck you.
It's not in the right way, because this caller is like giving productive feedback way. Like, hey, Alex, if you made this product of like, hey, the coming economic collapse, like, then you can use it when the market does go down.
Yeah.
You know, like it is a caller with a good faith. Within the world of InfoWars, that's a pretty good suggestion.
Yeah.
Alex is lashing out at him.
Yes.
Whereas, like, the times, I'm sure Bill Cooper did do this because he is also an asshole, but the times that we've heard him responding to callers in, like, sort of snippy ways, it's mostly because they're bringing up stupid ideas.
Yeah.
So that is still different.
Alex is still a stupid idea, though.
In the real world.
Right.
InfoWars, it's a good idea.
I'm always struggling with that.
And Alex's response of like, no one will buy it, no one cares, fuck you, it's just so childish, like, he's throwing a fucking tantrum.
Yeah, he is.
And it spirals to the point where he seems to be almost celebrating the idea that civilization is going to end.
Great.
We are filth. We are cowards. We are trash. And so all the yuppies wearing their mask and all the trendies getting into it, they're going to have everything they have taken and they're going to starve to death. And it's good. It's a blessing. See, I'm beginning to realize that it's all a blessing. All this crap's about to end. All this fake stuff, all the laziness, all the stupidness, all the TV shows, all the Netflix, it's all about to go.
All the conspiracy theory internet programs.
I was going to say, is he talking about him?
I don't know. Like, yeah, man, you know what? Hey, everyone's going to die and society's going to collapse entirely, but it's great because Netflix will be gone.
Yeah, it's about time we got rid of Netflix.
Just don't have a fucking account, Alex. It won't affect you at all. What are you doing? Just so sad. So anyway, Alex is real fucking out of it in that segment. That was a bad segment.
Yeah.
I'd be honest.
Yeah.
In terms of his show, pretty bad.
Not great. A little apocalyptic.
Fuck this show.
A little apocalyptic.
Stupid. Hey, why don't you make these shirts? No one cares. So Alex goes to break there. You hear the outro music. And he comes back. And, of course, he has to apologize.
All right, I'm getting a little dark today. That's why I got to take off a few days, folks. I've got plans and operations that would defeat the globalist overnight. People don't want it.
Fuck off.
They don't need it. They don't get it. And so, we will join the children. We deserve it. There's a way out, but I can tell you we're not going to follow it. No, America and the world will burn.
Yep.
Oh, that wasn't very apologetic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was kind of. He's like, I'm getting a little bit dark here. It feels like the intro to an apology.
Right. You know? And then he still wound up saying that the world were burning.
Well, sure. But like I said, it's the introduction to, like, that last segment was pretty fucked up.
A little dark.
Someone gave me a talking to.
Yeah.
I need to take a few days off. but then we get to the actual sort of apology. It's sort of taking some of this back.
Look, I didn't mean the things I said last segment. I'm never going to stop. And America and the world doesn't deserve to burn, but if we don't stand up and say no to this, that's what we're going to get.
Sorry, man. Look, I know I said that everyone's going to burn. I didn't mean it.
Oh, man. That is great. His childish, like, I want everybody to die. Fuck everybody. I'm sick of this shit. Hey, listen, I'm really sorry about that. I really apologize. That was
my dad came in and told me that no one's going to give you money if you act like this. And he's right. And so I'm sorry.
I need money.
America doesn't need to burn.
No.
So, but that's my assessment. That's how it looks to me.
Yeah.
But I should say that there is a counter argument that Alex is going to deliver in this next clip,
sure,
which is that he's not doing this for money.
I don't sit up here and do this show so I get money to keep paying this crew and keep running this place. I do it because I have a responsibility, no matter how bad things get, to try to stay on the air to expose this so that we're here on air while these critical things are happening. And I get mad thinking if I don't do a good job and get the money to stay on air, when stuff gets even worse and worse and worse, we won't be here to challenge it. And then I see the fact that there's not enough money to continue on at the level we're at. And I just think about the fact that if people really realized how serious this was, they would do their job, and I know a lot of you are, and get the word out about the guest and the shows and the things we cover, because this is life and death, and we predicted all of this because we've done our research, and it's going to get a lot worse unless we turn this around. And so there's a real desperation here, ladies and gentlemen, and I see the lackadaisical attitude of the general public, and it enrages me. But it's not their fault. They've been put since birth in front of a TV in a trance state, and we are a nation and a world of watchers, not of doers. So you better start doing now instead of watching. But they want you locked up in your house, watching, not doing. They want jellyfish. They're conquering us. This is an electronic, psychic, spiritual takeover. This is an overriding of the planet. This is systematically planned out. Mark of the beast, the whole nine yards. So, yes, I will tell listeners, I appreciate your support keeping us in the fight. And I've got things and products that all of you already need. And so I'll just tell you again with the things we go through here and what it takes to even stay in a position to defeat the globalist and the criminal nature of the system, that if you haven't flooded us with support while getting good products at the same time, we wouldn't be here. And my frustration isn't like I'm some victim saying, please stay, keep me in the fight. The longer I'm kept in the fight, the more they just want to kill me or put me in prison, which is fine. I'm not suicidal. I'll never commit suicide, but I'm really not worried about them grabbing me or putting me in handcuffs, because all that matters is I've got to continue my mission, not backing down to the end, and that's all in God's plan. But I do want to do it to the fullest extent I can, and that's why I'm asking folks that are around me and everybody else to take this damn serious, because this is damn serious. This is damn real. So, X3, the UN reports. And again, they report all this because they run it. Almost 3 million people have lower IQs or mental cognitive disabilities. Just go search even on NIH.gov because they don't have enough iodine. The globalists love that. That's why the average person is like a retarded jellyfish, because they are.
Oh, so, I mean, like his whole thing about like, I don't want money, I just want to stay in the fight, leads to an ad. It's all still part of the marketing presentation. And at the end, I mean, we talked about this 100 times, like the iodine deficiency numbers that he's talking about are in developing countries, and they're being fought by people like the UN.
Yeah.
The people who are the globalists that Alex hates are the people who are actively trying to solve the problem he's pretending exists largely in America.
Yep.
Just eat some salt.
Yep.
Eat iodized table salt.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. You won't have an iodine deficiency.
Nope.
Most likely.
Yeah.
So, Alex, I mean, it's just it's almost like an entire segment of the show, which is like this. I don't want, you know, I'm not doing this for money, but you got to flood us with money.
Yeah.
You know, I understand how this argument works. Like, yes, obviously, Alex is presenting it in a way that's like, I don't want the money. I want the money to be able to continue.
Sure.
But it seems like the only function of this show is to spread bullshit and make money. So continuing, it's just to continue to make money later.
I want money so I can continue to make money.
Right.
Why don't you guys get that?
With the presentation of we're actually doing something.
Yeah. And you're
not. So Alex's, his whole thing, one of the big narratives that goes throughout this show is, about some numbers about, starvation around the world. Mm-hmm. And, he talks about this here in this next clip, and he's pretty mad, that no one seems to care about this.
This is what we like. We like to be hoaxed, but let me tell you what isn't a hoax. 30 million facing starvation in the third world thanks to this right now. And they're going to die. Those little kids are going to die. And the average trendy doesn't care because they like to wear a mask and feel trendy. And like, oh, I'm so brave. I'm in a war zone. It's a war. And
so this is a point that Alex kept hitting on this episode. And it was something that I wasn't super interested in learning about, quite frankly, at first. Let's say like the first 20 times that I heard him bring it up. But it got to a point where I realized that it wasn't disinterest that was making me not want to get into it. It was anger. Here, Alex is trying to pretend that he has literally any concern for the well-being of people in developing countries who may be affected by the slowing down of economies. That's a topic that we can discuss, and I will get into it here in a minute, but Alex has absolutely no right to pretend to care here at all.
None.
Prior to supporting Trump, Alex staked his claim very aggressively in supporting Ron Paul, the only honest politician, in his 2008 and 2012 runs for the presidency. One of the big things that Ron Paul believed in was the elimination of all U.S. foreign aid. The number of deaths that would result from that kind of a move is incalculable, and it's not even taking into account the hits that developing countries would take in terms of their educational capacity or general sanitation programs. The staggering level of cruelty that you have to accept to endorse a candidate who wants to get rid of all U.S. foreign aid precludes you from ever being able to credibly pretend you give a shit about anybody in the developing world. So on that count, Alex can fuck himself.
You bet.
The number that Alex is citing, about 30 million people being on the brink or risk of starvation, that's not a number that's how many people are predicted to starve if we don't reopen our economy. Our economy has nothing to do with that figure really at all, at least on a one-to-one level. This is something that was put out by the UN World Food Program, who warned that we're looking at a very serious world food problem that has the potential to leave millions at risk if we don't do something. This was something that their executive director, David Beasley, was warning about even before the coronavirus situation was here. The issue is that there's a whole lot of issues happening right now. To quote an ABC News article about Beasley's comments, quote, "It's because of wars in Syria, Yemen, and elsewhere, locust swarms in Africa, frequent natural disasters and economic crises, including in Lebanon, Congo, Sudan, and Ethiopia." There is an element to this that does involve our economy and other countries' economies, in as much as if we can't afford to provide foreign aid to the countries that are facing famine conditions, then there will end up being severe humanitarian crises and a lot of people could die.
Yep.
This is a very serious issue that deserves attention, but make no mistake about this. Alex doesn't want our economy to be open so we can send money and foreign aid distributed by the UN. Alex is using the abstract idea of the deaths of people in developing countries as a prop for his narratives, and it's legitimately disgusting. This has nothing to do with whether or not Trump tells people to go to gyms or not. This has to do with whether or not we deprioritize people in developing countries when things get tough at home. That's the central question as it relates to the matter of people going hungry around the world. And again, Alex's hero, Ron Paul, would happily let them all die. So I guess if Alex actually cares about this at all, he'll call on Trump to provide increased funding to the UN World Food Program.
Doubt it.
I challenge him to do that, but I suspect he won't because this is a game to him.
Yep.
And the idea of 30 million dead people in foreign countries in the developing world is just a prop that he can use to argue in order for the economy to reopen.
Yeah.
So these large companies that he pretends to be opposed to can make a profit.
If a millionaire pretends to give a shit about anybody in a developing country, they should have their money taken away from him and be tarred and feathered. I think that would be the way to solve most problems.
Sure, that's a side issue to the more important one that is Alex's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, this is a real thing. And you know what? There are people who are talking about this. Alex is pretending that no one cares. You know who cares? People in the fucking UN World Food Program. The people who are actually on the ground working to avert this humanitarian crisis.
Yep.
Not people like Alex blowing hard on the radio about how he doesn't like his show and he wants to fucking quit and run away to a redoubt. But no, I'm going to stay here forever.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
What an asshole.
Yep. So as this episode ends, Alex descends into a bit of a situation where he's reiterating and really like hitting harder these narratives about how doctors are just fucking.
Great.
No one's
great.
In the hospitals.
Cool.
Doctors are just drinking and fucking.
Great.
The hospitals are empty. I talk to people I know that are nurses and doctors. They're having sex and watching Pornhub and Netflix. They're drinking. They're
at the same time?
Pills, they're having orgies.
Sure.
That's on record.
Which record?
They're taking pills. They're drinking vodka. They're drinking whiskey. They're drinking wine coolers. They're drinking White Claw. They're having
what?
Sex. Because hospitals are empty and all there is booty call time. Booty, 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 booty everywhere. Rocking everywhere. Rocking everywhere. At the Players Club for a month or two. That's what's really going on is they're at the Players Club, folks. Bang the nurses. Take the pills. Snort the coke. Party, 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 party every day. Rocking every day. Rocking every day. You see them headlights. You see me knock them curtains down? I'm doing 100 on the highway. That's what's going down, baby. I've talked to friends and family, and they say it is a giant orgy.
Again, this is just based on things that his dumb friends are saying.
Yeah.
I also don't think that that's necessarily true. I would suspect that this is mostly about, like, you might have seen, like, a TikTok video of nurses dancing somewhere and assumed, like, oh, they're all dancing everywhere.
Right.
And then he's just filled in the blanks and tried to apply, like, oh, I talked to all these doctors and they say it's all just an orgy.
Yep. I think one way to reduce his outsized aggression towards hospitals and doctors and nurses would be to neuter him. I think neutering is a way to solve a lot of his aggression.
Well, COVID-19's coming for your balls.
I really think that's a good way to go.
Mm-hmm. So Alex ends the episode here kind of excited that these nurses that are all just fucking and taking pills and stuff, they'll all die in the future.
Great.
And then he admits that he hasn't really done his job at all because he freaked out and got really mad.
But here's the thing. Those nurses that have done the fake videos saying everybody's dead and all that, they'll be crying for mommy when we're Venezuela, and we will be, don't worry. Just look at these people. You know, I said I'd get to Craig and EJ and Ken and Sonny and everybody else, and I love you to death, but I didn't do it. I'm a bad person. I know Troyer's coming up, but I guess I should jam a call or two in here. You know, I've got like 20 more videos here. But just remember what Jeff Zuckerberg said.
Again, Jeff Zuckerberg?
You dirty, filthy scum Americans, and you don't go outside.
Yeah, that is weird. It does seem like he maybe is making that mistake kind of regularly.
Yeah.
I'm still of the mind that it's misspeaking and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But it is weird. It's more consistent than it appeared to be originally. So he's, the whole thing about delighting in the idea of these nurses and medical professionals dying, begging for mommy is gross. But more importantly to me, I think, is this admission at the end here. Didn't take all the calls that I said I was going to take.
Nope.
Didn't get to these stories that I was going to cover.
Why would you?
Because I had a freak out in the middle of the show, and I had to be really defensive about how I don't want just money, and also I hate my show, and the world deserves to burn. And then I got a talking to and came back on air and said, hey, sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm a whiny little baby is all I heard.
Yeah.
And I think we should change it to first do no harm to anyone but Alex Jones. I don't think he deserves medical care. If you are saying that nurses are making fake videos,
I feel like
fake videos after 16-hour shifts.
I feel like it's I feel like it's okay for you to say that, but if I heard a doctor say that, I would be offended. Because I think that doctors and medical professionals, and this is true from a number that I've spoken to and some friends that I have who are in the field, there's a calling to being
absolutely
that you have to sort of take away your ego or whatever feelings you have about like this is a bad person or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you get into that game, you end up in a place where, you know, you'd be denying care to people on sort of all sorts of arbitrary.
They should not be the arbiters of who gets and who denies care,
mm-mm,
who lives or dies.
But for you to say that as a opinion you have, I think it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not a doctor.
No, no.
In
fact, I will give him medical care from me directly.
Oh, that would be bad.
That might be worse.
So Alex ends the 21st and we get into the 22nd, Wednesday's show, and he opens up real, real hot.
I have news so insanely important that I'm choking right now. I mean, the crew knows this is not theatrics. They've been watching me the last month here.
Doing theatrics?
I think so.
This is so incredible. It's all confirmed.
I don't know what the big news is.
It's confirmed, though.
I listened to this episode, and I think I have maybe two possibilities for what the big news is. But here's what he says immediately after, which would lead you to suspect that this is what the big news is that's causing Alex to choke on the 22nd.
I was saying from numbers I saw 3 weeks ago that about 2 million people are starving to death right now or dying in the next month. From the numbers I saw just out of India, it was 2 million. So I just went with that one country. Ladies and gentlemen, the numbers are now in from the UN themselves, who, again,
who you hate
this.
and then ask for power and control. 30 million are starving to death on top of the 10 million right now. That's the Globe and Mail, the big Canadian paper.
So it's possible that that's Alex's big news, the story that's so big he's choking and not being dramatic for sure. It's the story that he covered the day before about big 30 news. Million people dying in developing countries at risk, or people not dying necessarily, but at risk of starvation.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. Although it does make sense in InfoWars world.
See, there we go.
It doesn't make sense from a perspective of like actually taking this as a sincere actor.
Right.
The news that you reported yesterday is somehow fucking you
choking.
Up today.
Choking today.
I don't know.
Okay.
So the Globe and Mail article that Alex is talking about is a week old when he's here on air. It's from April 15th, and it just covers the same issues we talked about earlier.
Sure.
Also, if Alex's argument is that the globalists want to shut the economy down in order to kill off all these people, which seems to be what he's getting at, he's going to have to contend with this quote from the UN World Food Program Executive Director David Beasley from that very Globe and Mail article that he's citing as a source. Quote, if we lost our funding, a minimum 30 million would die. Over a three-month period, that would be 300,000 people dying per day. That's why leaders have got to balance out the COVID response with keeping the economy going, because otherwise a lot more people will die from starvation and economic deterioration than from COVID itself. So the UN simultaneously wants to crash the economy to punish Trump and are advocating that we balance keeping some of the economy going so we can provide aid to the developing world. Seems like maybe the first one is just Alex's paranoid imagination.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. What you got to understand, Dan, is it's about what they're not saying.
It's the jazz?
Exactly.
Whatever.
It's the notes you can't hear that makes the notes you can hear paranoid lies. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's one possibility is the big news, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense since he's already reported this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but that's one possibility.
Okay.
This next clip is not a possibility.
Not a possibility.
This is not the big news, but it's big news to me.
Old man house phone died tragically.
We have bad news. He's with Don DeGrand Prix. No. Alex tells a story about getting in another fight with somebody about masks.
Sure, sure. What a child.
He apparently was driving around. He saw his son driving around.
Uh-huh.
And so he flagged him down into a liquor store parking lot. And that is the setting of this story.
Okay.
So last night I see my son driving down a side road. He doesn't live with me. He's grown up. He's moved out now at 17. He flags me. I say, pull in here. And we pull in to a strip center, and we're not parked in the front row. We're parked in a side row about 30 feet from a liquor store, from a tanning place, and from an AT&T store. In fact, we're parked kind of by the AT&T store, maybe 40 feet from the liquor store. And I see guys with masks putting boxes out front of it, and one of them looks at me and says, put your mask on. But from a distance, I can see what he was saying. So I talk to my son. He walks over with me. I didn't think to shoot footage of this on my phone.
Shocking.
Yeah, dude, I'm not trying to come in and buy your liquor. And he goes, well, still, you need to wear a mask. So I start talking, and people come out of the store, and they go, oh, Alex Jones, for shame, man. They go, yeah, it's all a fraud. Did you see John Roberts today saying it's 0.1% dying? And I said, yeah, that's what a lot of the numbers are showing. We'll go over that in a moment. It's beyond bombshell. So there were the three people in the liquor store coming out when I'm arguing with a guy who's telling me from 30, 40 feet away, hey, put your mask on. I guess he thought I was coming in the liquor store. And so I started trying to show the guy the video. He didn't want to see it.
Yeah, no shit.
And he had his power trip look in his eye. And I said, you're pathetic. You're being dog trained to submit in all this 6-foot separation. They're coming out with microchips. They're coming out with forced inoculations. This is all a setup for medical tyranny. And you're a fool. And the guy started laughing at me.
Yeah, no shit.
So I just said, listen, I'm not putting you down. You work at a liquor store. But there's a reason.
What?
I'm successful, and there's a reason you're not. You are a willful moron.
And then a couple other security guards came up, and he walked back.
Yeah.
I was told to leave. And,
God, what a dick.
Yeah, that last part, too, is real dickish.
Yeah.
You dumb liquor store worker.
That's
why I'm successful and you're not.
I know how to lie to people, and I never learned how to read.
Yeah. So I don't think this story happened. Yeah. I think it's just another one of his Sort of defensiveness fantasies surrounding masks. Yeah, yeah, but ultimately, it's just a sales pitch for the masks. It really is just the lead-in.
God, I hate him so much.
Had another guy in a gas station the day before that pull that crap. So that's the reality of where we are. If you're wearing a mask, I'm not judging you. In fact, we ordered a bunch of masks that are coming in next week, so you can pre-order them now, that are a nice black mask with InfoWars.com on them. And if you, in the future, they're saying, this is going to go forever now. Watch. It's submission. So if you got to get on an airplane or you got to go in the grocery store, hey, a light, comfortable cloth one that you can breathe through, go along with the Kabuki Theater, the submission, but fight back while you're at it and shoot your mouth off the whole time. Limited edition COVID-19 hoax mask. I told them to put hoax on the page. They didn't. So listeners are like, well,
yeah, no shit.
It's a hoax, but you're not. Yeah, but you're selling a mask.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. Probably some sort of law or warning
maybe. But I also probably don't want that to be on the Wayback Machine or something that people can find and point out later.
Yeah.
But the question of, like, you saying it's a hoax, but you're selling masks, that is a good question. Eh. And people should ask themselves why that is the case.
You would think. He's not out here for money, Dan.
No.
He's not out here for money.
No. It's almost like, let's say... there's like forced work brigades that come in. Alex is against that.
No, terrible.
Right?
Terrible.
But you know what? They come in and he's like, you know what? Yeah, we're selling transportation to the work brigade.
Well, of course.
But hey, you know what you should do is you should get in, but also yell a bunch.
You gotta do it. Yeah. You gotta do it.
Do the submitting thing that the tyrannical government is forcing you to do while giving me money, but also make a stink about it.
That's not
what the Patriots would do. That is not what a heroic dissident.
Nope.
A dissident like Alex should be saying, fuck masks, period.
Yep.
If you wear one, you're not an info warrior or something. That's the line he needs to take, not like, hey, we'll make a brand out of this. It's fucking nonsense.
As always, InfoWars, the butt of the spear. Yeah. We will come up. You do it.
The folks who will find a way to profit off spears.
Yeah.
So in that clip where he was talking about fighting a guy, yelling at a guy in a liquor store parking lot, Alex mentioned this video of John Roberts of Fox News talking about the coronavirus death rate. Mm. And it has to do with a study from USC. And we'll get into that here in a second. And this is the other candidate for the big news that was making Alex choke.
Sure.
There's 400 plus thousand people in L.A. County, the health department's reporting. And there's only 600 and something dead. And I looked up the numbers today. 663 that may have died from coronavirus. They had a positive test for coronavirus, so they may have died from it. 663 people, out of their estimates from what they've been testing now, 400,000 or more have had it. 663. Now, if you go to the calculator.net and you put 663
and add 3 to it,
you get 663 divided 400,000 equals, and then there's the number right there, 0.001657 equals 0.16575.
If you flip it upside down, it says boobs.
This is brutal.
You do your own math with that, but that is not even close to 1%.
So, like I said, I think this might be the big news. It's a story that he's covering a lot of, on this episode, and there's kind of two aspects to it. One is bullshit, and the other is misrepresentation. The bullshit part is that it all boils down to a video that someone captured of Fox News' John Roberts talking to New York Times photographer Doug Mills before one of these White House press briefings. The video has been used to present the idea that the virus and the response to it is a hoax, even though if you watch the video, Mills says, quote, so it's a hoax, to which Roberts replies, quote, no, I don't think it's a hoax. This video has been used by all manner of conspiracy theorists. The big narrative has been that Mills accidentally slipped up and admitted that there is a secret vaccine. Roberts says that Mills doesn't need to wear his mask because the fatality rate is lower than we thought, to which Mills replies, quote, oh yeah, we've all been vaccinated. It's clear that they're friends fucking around.
Yeah,
and even when reached for comment, Roberts even said, like, That was just gallows humor.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
To Alex's credit, he's not selling the vaccine portion of this video. He's interested only in the lower fatality rate part of it, which is was John Roberts discussing the misrepresented part of Alex's narrative. Roberts was bringing up a study conducted by USC that reached a conclusion that there may be as many as 400,000 people in LA County who have had coronavirus. This study has yet to be peer-reviewed, but if it stands to scrutiny, all it really shows is that there may be a much lower fatality rate in LA County than we currently knew to be the case.
Right.
Most people had assumed that the numbers we had weren't fully accurate for California, because relative to other states, other states that have had high numbers of cases, there hasn't been as much widespread testing in the state.
Right.
It could well be that the number of people who have had the virus in the state is higher than the confirmed number, but I don't really see how that makes the outbreak any less serious. It possibly puts California's fatality rate into a lower range, but that's about it. Also, given the lower proportion of tests administered in California, it's also possible that the death numbers that we have for the state are lower than accurate.
Perhaps, you know? Even probable.
It's unclear.
Yeah.
There's a lot of assessment and study that needs to be done here to get a completely clear picture of what's what. And right. This study is interesting, but we need to see what happens with it moving forward.
Yeah.
Once that happens, I'll assess things once they're more concrete, because unlike Alex, I don't base my beliefs on preliminary studies. There very well may end up being this could be a situation where this is good and it's well done study, mm-hmm. but there's plenty of examples in the past where things appeared to be some way, and then it turns out, oh no, here's a problem with this.
No, Dan, it's a peer reviewed study.
Well, this one isn't.
It is
yet.
Because I am technically one of their peers. If we can serve on a jury together, that means I'm a peer, and I give it 4 stars. Peer review.
Go home, tell your mother you're brilliant.
4 stars.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex has some complaints that he wants to make about the Pope. He has some beef with the Pope and the globalists.
Absolutely.
This is their globalist revolution to cut the carbon, to kill the industrial state, to make you poor and to make you austere. This is their admitted plan, and they're all over the news. The Pope says, we are dying because we're evil. We deserve this. Capitalism is wasteful. The earth is doing this. You're hearing the whole UN, Gaia, world government speech that we deserve this from the Hollywood
trash. From the Pope.
And everybody else that are the same ones saying, shut everything down to save lives.
So the Pope and the globalists and the Hollywood trash, they're all coming out with this message that we deserve this. Now, Jordan,
sure.
I'd like to transport you back 24 hours.
Let's try.
On Alex's own
what
show.
Happens?
America and the world's going to burn. It needs to burn. We killed too many babies. We're done. We're going to lose. God just needs to blow the planet up. See, I realize now that that's why I feel we need to pay for what we've done. Actually, we are filth. We are cowards. We are trash. And so all the yuppies wearing their mask and all the trendies getting into it, they're going to have everything they have taken, and they're going to starve to death. And it's good. Look, I didn't mean the things I said last segment. Deserve to burn, but
all right, Alex.
Yeah, yep.
Grow up.
I can't believe that the Pope and the government and Hollywood would say that we deserve this.
Yeah.
How dare they? I said it.
Yeah. Or maybe Alex is part of the Gaia globalist plan or whatever.
I did not expect the Pope to be a secret pagan Earth worshiper, but
whatever.
Why not?
So the last refuge of the scoundrel is patriotism. According to Thomas Jefferson.
Sure.
Quote, Thomas Jefferson. but it turns out that the last refuge of the patriot scoundrel is saying, like, hey, man, things would be worse if Hillary was in.
Great.
Which is like, when all else fails, just be like,
blame Hillary.
Hey, isn't this better than Hillary?
At least it's not Hillary.
Can you imagine what would be happening if Hillary Clinton was president today? They would be carrying out this exact same plan, except it'd be 10 times worse because you wouldn't have Trump in there trying to block it, trying to reason with the American people to not be hysterical and to not give in to the fear. But they didn't do that. So the president then had to ride the wave or he would have been destroyed.
Whatever.
And that was the trap that was set. But the next part of the trap is destroy the economy, which they've basically already done. Crude oil's never been at zero, and now it's negative. And sweet crude and processed crude is on its way down to zero. That's called cardiac arrest in the economy.
Yeah, I love sweet crude.
Yeah.
Put it on my waffles.
It's good stuff.
So the negative oil prices were specifically about futures contracts for May for West Texas Intermediate's crude oil. The reason the price hit negative rates was because it was the day before those contracts were going to be closed. And if you held those contracts when they closed, you were obligated to accept delivery of the oil. The price cratered because a lot of people who held those contracts could not store the oil, and thus they were desperate to sell off the contracts. The price for West Texas Intermediate's June contracts hasn't gone to zero, although it is at about $14 a barrel when I was preparing this episode, so it's still a bit down.
Yeah.
In fairness, however, if things don't change, it could very well hit negative rates as we come up on the closing date of those contracts.
Right.
It's possible, but for now, it's not the what Alex is presenting.
Right.
There are a lot of issues with this situation, and some of them could combine to spell trouble in the future. But this particular incident with the negative prices, that shouldn't be the main thing that people are focusing on. For one thing, during the coronavirus period, there's obviously a decreased demand for oil. In response to this decreased demand, there was it was requested that OPEC countries cut back production. But this has not happened to the extent that it would be needed in order to balance out the supply and demand. As such, there's an excess of oil being created, with people having a difficult time storing it. And, I should say, they're having a difficult time storing it on land.
Ah!
According to the World Economic Forum, quote, some oil producers, hoping to maintain their market share, have taken to storing their excess oil at sea, leasing tankers at high costs. Some are believed to be paying in excess of $100,000 per day for each tanker.
Hey!
I'm no expert, but I feel like massive storage ships of oil on the sea is a recipe for trouble.
When has that ever been an issue, Dan? Dan, I can't think of any situation.
Never.
What are you talking
about?
Come on. Hey, oil's great. Let's put it everywhere.
Another compounding factor is that Alberta oil, which is produced from oil sands, is no longer profitable to produce. It costs more to extract and transport it than it would to sell for, which has caused people to flee from it as a commodity. According to the Financial Times, this will, quote, not on its own cause significant damage to the U.S. energy sector. However, they note that it could hurt the perception that oil is a safe investment. Based on their assessment, the solution is fairly simple. We need to either slow production of oil, start using a ton more of it, or find places to store the oil we're currently producing. Unless we do one of those things, the supply and demand will be out of balance, and we'll just keep seeing volatile pricing. It's a bad situation and one that could cause some potentially troubling ripples, but honestly, it could also provide the political will to finally do something about the deep-seated problems in the U.S. energy market. It seems like there could barely be a better time to start making moves towards alternative energy models, since an incident like this demonstrates the benefits of not being so concerned with a single commodity that can blow up overnight. It seems almost like there is a silver lining to an incident like this. Right.
Counterpoint, what if instead Trump just gets as many of his followers killed as possible and bails out the oil industry?
Why not both?
Have you considered that?
This could be a situation where your boy Mark Moreno could really take it on the chin.
God.
You know?
I would very much like to give him one on the chin.
So Alex talks here about how he knows that these globalists, they're eugenics cult, and he's known this for a really long time because back in the 60s, they were trying to get all the like smart kids.
Sure.
By 1966, at places like University of Texas, they were openly taking the top students in the country and teaching them about the eugenics world government takeover.
Were they breeding them?
This is a really important point to make. Like, that's all just stuff his dad told him about how he's the smartest boy in Texas, and the globalists tried to lure him into their plan.
Absolutely.
You have to really recognize how much stuff Alex believes and repeats. Pretending to come from authoritative sources and things that are proven are just bullshit that his dad probably told him.
Yep.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah. You can always trust a CIA dentist, though, Dan.
Sure. So, but when you look for backup for all this sort of stuff, like, you know, Alex has his standard examples, and one of them he pulls out all the time is Bill Joy's article in Wired magazine,
right.
Why the Future Doesn't Need Us.
I really don't want to talk about that article anymore.
No, because it's very obvious if you actually go read the article, it doesn't say what Alex says.
Yep.
However, something that is fairly similar to what Alex is saying is a short excerpt from the Unabomber that Bill Joy includes in the article.
Right.
Now, I know this And if Alex had read it, he would know it too.
Sure.
In this next clip, when Alex brings up Bill Joy's article, I get a little sense that Alex is keenly aware that he's actually just talking about the Unabomber.
They think you're a useful eater. Bill Joy wrote about it in 1999 in Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, Wired magazine. How he went to the meeting with the top billionaires. They made the decision to entertain you, dumb you down, stun you, and then kill you. Theodore Kaczynski was in the CIA. He was briefed on all this. It was horrible. He started bombing people he knew were involved in it. He's in a supermax prison.
I think that clip is a dead giveaway.
Yep.
I think he absolutely understands that he's just talking about the Unabomber.
Yep.
There's no other reason for Alex to connect those thoughts. And it's a sad attempt to justify using Bill Joy's article dishonestly. Also, Ted Kaczynski was not in the CIA. The psychological experiments that he was a part of when he was at Harvard were administered by Henry Murray, who consulted with the Office of Strategic Services, which would later become the CIA, during World War II. He was involved with the OSS during World War II.
Gotcha.
The way Alex is talking, it becomes pretty clear that he thinks what the Unabomber did was good. According to Alex, Ted Kaczynski learned of the evil globalist's plan and was sending bombs to people who were putting that plan into action. Except that's complete bullshit. It's just a fantasy that Alex is making up.
Yep.
There's a lot you can go learn about the Unabomber if you want, and this is not accurate.
You gotta find some way to really love the guy who sent bombs to places and blew them up.
Alex just likes white terrorists.
Yes, he does. Hey, you know what that's similar to? Something Joy Behar said about him.
Huh. So in this next clip, Alex talks about the big plan with this, like, crashing oil and crashing the economy.
Sure.
Of course, it all fits into his model of the way that the Rothschild, Nathan Rothschild,
sure.
Did his crashing of the English economy in order to buy it all up.
Sure.
They're just doing that again. So Alex tells this story. And again, this story is not true. But listen to how passionately he tells this story.
Americans are scared of the virus. They're scared of the fact that the economy is going down. So China starts showing the people with the chemical sprays again and all the fear and all the drones and locking people up and going, oh, there's at least 30 strains. Oh, some of them are deadlier than before. Just like Scooby-Doo. The bad guys want to take the country over. They want to drive the stock market down to 5%, buy it all up.
Like just like Scooby-Doo.
Did at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. And Lord Wellington had really just beaten Napoleon for the second time. It was the Battle of Waterloo. They sent carrier pigeons to the coast, had fast corvette, not by Chevy, that's named after a fast ship, haul ass across the channel, and they ran in right as the stock market opened in London and said, Wellington annihilated. And the stocks went to 1%. Lord Rothschild bought them all and became supreme ruler of the British Empire.
Did he?
And
nope.
The same thing, driving
I don't remember that.
Down to nothing. Crude down to nothing. All the oil down to nothing.
That story is not true. That's just a standard feature of anti-Semitic propaganda over history. Like, that's, he believes this, like, the Rothschild became the supreme ruler. Like, this is, like, he just believes things that aren't true. He passes off his knowledge of this Bill Joy article, what he really knows is Unabomber stuff.
Yeah.
And he presents it in a different way, like this whole narrative about it.
Yep.
What he knows is this anti-Semitic propaganda surrounding the Rothschild family and this the Battle of Waterloo that was used by Nazis, by their films they put out during World War II. Like, he believes that, and he presents it as real. He doesn't know shit.
It's almost like he believes Nazis more than not Nazis. It's almost like he will believe whatever a Nazi says in order to take advantage of it. He's a Nazi, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, Alex talks about this John Roberts of Fox News angle. And it has to do with the idea that what happened there was that they revealed that the media knows that this is a hoax.
Sure.
But nobody cares about the actual statistic from the county. They just are freaking out that behind the scenes, the media knows it's a hoax. She's gone. Wanted to get her take on that because that is so massive. That's the clip when you go in a store and they're saying, wear your mask, wear your mask. You just show them that and say, you're an idiot.
What, do you want to show them the part of the clip where the guy says, so it's a hoax, and John Roberts says, no, I don't think it's a hoax? Because you're saying that this clip proves that it's a hoax.
No, you don't want to show them that.
You probably don't. When you go in a store and you yell at somebody about how it's a hoax, and then you show them a video of the media people saying, no, it's not a hoax, I don't know, it kind of ruins things.
I don't even want you to show me a music video of my favorite band at a store.
No, leave
don't
me alone.
Show me, don't come up to me and say, watch this video.
No.
Go away.
Yeah, especially if you're Alex.
Yeah, and if you're not wearing a mask.
So Alex thinks that he seems to think that people are not getting resuscitated at hospitals. Like if you go to a hospital now.
Too busy fucking.
Right.
Yeah.
And this leads into some pretty weird conspiracy theories about financial motivations that hospitals have for playing along with this hoax or whatever.
It's been this a lot in the last few months. They said, oh, when it gets bad and 3 million people die in the United States, we're going to stop resuscitating people that have heart attacks, whether they be 50 years old or 80 years old, because we need the hospital space. Well, now they admit that the hospitals are 3 times emptier than they've ever been in the last 50 years. The National Health Service reports they're 4 times more empty than ever. Empty. But now when you have a heart attack, just like Venezuela, they don't resuscitate you because that's non-essential and you're non-essential. And I was looking the numbers up, we had a guest on talking about this, and I didn't even know this. You get in fact, I even pulled the article up a few nights ago when David Icke said it. I didn't know that. The feds give a hospital, if someone doesn't have coverage, $4,000 for pneumonia, $40,000 for COVID-19.
Oh, so there's two pieces in that clip that are complete bullshit. The first is that when Alex heard people talking about doctors not being able to help every patient and having to decide who gets care and who doesn't, which he seems to be making a joke out of, it wasn't a discussion about how things about things that are happening now in the United States. It was a horrifying glimpse at what could happen if our medical system was overwhelmed by the number of coronavirus patients that were coming into the hospital. It's a pretty simple dynamic to understand. If the number of people requiring immediate care is greater than the number of people who can provide said care, the care providers will have to decide who to help. In that situation, you enter a nightmare where you have to write off people who are probably going to die because you can't save everyone. This conversation wasn't happening for no reason. It was because back in March, that's exactly the situation doctors in Italy were in. From an article in Politico, quote, in an interview that went viral after it was published in the Italian daily Corriere della Sera Monday, Christian Salaroli, an anesthesiologist from a hospital in Bergamo, recounted scenes of wartime triage where old patients have to be left by the wayside. Quote, the choice is made inside of an emergency room used for mass events where only COVID-19 patients enter. If a person is between 80 and 95 and has severe respiratory failure, he probably won't make it. Also from the article, quote, for now, the marching orders are save scarce resources for the patients who have the greatest chance of survival. That means prioritizing younger, otherwise healthy patients over older patients or those with pre-existing conditions. An article in the AP discusses what that looked like in real life and quotes Marco Resta, the deputy chief of Policlinico San Donato's intensive care unit. Discussing how doctors have to decide who will get access to newly opened intensive care beds, the article says, quote, even if there is no chance, he says, you have to look a patient in the face and say all is well, and this lie destroys you. It's horrifying to consider, and a few weeks later, doctors in Spain were dealing with the exact same horrors. A March 25th article in Bloomberg discusses a Madrid emergency room, quote, people are dying in waiting rooms before they can be admitted as the coronavirus pandemic overpowers medical staff. With some funeral service halted in the Spanish capital and no space left in the morgue, corpses are being stored in the main ice rink. The conversation was not happening because this was something that was happening in the United States, but because it was a horror that our kin in other countries were living through, which could easily be our reality too if we made the wrong decisions. The entire point of the distancing and masks and carefulness measures is for every one of us to do whatever we can to make sure we don't end up in that situation, because once we're there, that's when doctors cannot help you if you have a heart attack. This is when our medical system has all its resources completely depleted by one pressing emergency, and everything else is automatically a lower priority. If we do these things, we help make sure that situation is one we never have to live through. If you have a heart attack now, our hospitals will be able to help you, largely because of people doing the things that Alex is actively protesting against. If he gets his way with his dumb rallies against distancing measures and all that shit, there's a chance we will end up in the nightmare scenario that he pretends to be fighting against. As for that payments thing, that's just something that David Icke told Alex, but David Icke was just repeating bullshit he heard on Fox News. Minnesota State Senator Scott Jensen was on the Laura Ingraham show and said, quote, "Anytime healthcare intersects with dollars, it gets awkward. Right now, Medicare has determined that if you have COVID-19 admission to a hospital, you get paid $13,000. If that COVID-19 patient goes on a ventilator, you get $39,000, three times as much." From there, the conspiracy world started revving their engines, and it was decided that hospitals had a financial incentive in calling everything COVID-19.
We should remove the financial incentive from our healthcare system. That's what they're saying, right? They're very angry about there being a financial incentive in the healthcare system.
Weird.
I assume they want Medicare for all, right?
Maybe. Factcheck.org reached out to Jensen, who told them, quote, "He did not think that hospitals were intentionally misclassifying cases for financial reasons, but it hardly matters. The kernel of the idea had been presented, and once that happens, it doesn't matter if the guy who presented it said, 'I didn't mean it like that.' Doesn't matter. Has a life of its own." Factcheck reached out to some doctors to get a sense of what this was all about, and as it turns out, it's bullshit. This is just the amount that Medicare pays for treatment of COVID-19,
right,
not diagnosis. But according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, these numbers are very much in line with normal non-COVID payments from Medicare, with respiratory infections averaging about $13,000, and in cases that escalate to the need for ventilators, comes in around $40,000.
Sure.
The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which Trump signed into law, did give a 20% uptick in funds for Medicare patients who were treated for COVID-19, but it strains credulity to think that hospitals are just going to be fraudulently diagnosing people with the virus for a small bump in Medicare funds. If they're caught doing that, they run the risk of being removed from the Medicare program entirely, leaving aside how they could be sued or charged with criminal malpractice.
Yep.
Alex is accusing these doctors at these hospitals of a crime. It's a pretty serious allegation. So this kind of situation is one where he's going to need to prove his case or shut the fuck up. You can't just cite numbers about Medicare payments and then say case closed like you've proven something. Like, this is a disgrace.
Yep.
This is nonsense.
I just, it is never too often to say how high the fucking stakes are and how dangerous he is. This is terrifyingly dangerous.
Yeah.
This guy is, and somehow he's technically not committing a crime. He is helping, he's getting people killed. Fox News is getting people killed. The president is getting people killed, and somehow that's fine. Somehow our legal system has no problem with all that. And neither do we. Apparently, we're just all going to let this go.
We have a problem with it, clearly. But yeah, I mean, it's where it intersects with like foundational freedoms that we've not considered the limits of for a very long time. You know, we haven't really had that conversation, whereas other countries in Europe, for instance, have, you know, these real limitations, like Holocaust denial being illegal in Germany, where you recognize that your free speech rights are not absolute.
Yeah.
When there are real, like, solid consequences for the things that you say, that we understand that in terms of, like, you can punch the air freely, but if I punch you, it's assault.
Right.
There are the consequences do matter in terms of the action. And I don't know. I'm not sitting here saying that I support like total revamping of our understanding of free speech, but I don't think that the conversation is necessarily unwarranted.
Yeah. No, what we're doing now is not as good as other stuff that we could be doing. And we're not even talking about doing anything else.
Sure. I mean, it's possible that the perspective you're bringing is accurate.
Right.
Now, that being said, we're not having a full conversation of it that takes into account the side unintended consequences of what you're advocating. Because it's very possible that you pull the thread a little bit and you start to realize, well, there might be more severe consequences from that than you're realizing.
I'm not saying that
you
have a plan.
You solve one problem and it creates another, possibly.
I'm not saying that I have the plan to solve it. But there is no way that we can look at what's going on right now and say we've done the best we could do.
It doesn't feel like it.
It's not possible.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So Alex's talk about this, you have a heart attack now, they're not going to resuscitate you in that last clip.
Sure.
It turns out that this has to do with a story that he read in the New York Post.
New York Post. New York issues do not resuscitate guidelines for cardiac patients amid coronavirus. Yep. So there you go. Death panels, folks. Bye-bye.
So this is a great example of why I really just don't care for Alex much. So there is a New York Post article with the headline, quote, New York issues do not resuscitate guidelines for cardiac patients amid coronavirus. This was about an order that was floated that told emergency workers to not bother reviving someone if they arrive and that person doesn't have a pulse. Previously, the standard was to try for, quote, up to 20 minutes to revive people. This article cites an approximately 3-4% success rate in resuscitating patients that have no pulse when EMTs arrive, which is a small number, but definitely not an insignificant one. This headline was from an article from April 21st. By the time Alex is on air here on April 22nd, there's another article in the New York Post with the headline, quote, New York scraps do not resuscitate order during coronavirus pandemic. I know this article came out before Alex got on air because I checked timestamps, and if he's covering this story, he has every reason to be aware of this update. Paramedics unions were not happy with this guidance, and they pushed back, and the order was reversed. The conversation about whether or not it's necessary for New York EMTs to conserve their resources to the extent of not spending 20 minutes trying to resuscitate patients they find without a pulse, that's decidedly above my pay grade, and I don't know. But here's the situation from where I'm sitting. Alex is complaining about a problem that has already been solved by the time he's discussing it. He's misrepresenting an already solved problem. This is a perfect encapsulation of much of his career.
Yep. You nailed it.
It's nonsense.
Only three people voted to
bring in the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the other thing that we get here on this 22nd episode is Alex really, really keeping on swinging about how doctors are just fucking.
I got family that are nurses or doctors. They're drinking vodka and having sex and watching pornos and Netflix, okay? And I was told by separate people that, we're having a party. I go, what are you doing? Well, what do you think? The nurses and the doctors are having a good time. What are you doing? Well, what do you think we're doing? Watching porn and Netflix? Yeah. I got to talk to family. They go, I'm watching porn and drinking vodka. But I was like, oh, you're having a party? What's going on? Well, there's nobody here. We're just, what do you think we're doing? You're banging the nurses. I mean, this is a family show. I'm just telling you, there's nobody in the damn hospitals. They're in there having orgies, ladies and gentlemen.
They're all fucking. This is a family show.
If this conversation happened, which I don't know if it did, kind of doubt it,
yeah.
Here's how that conversation actually happened. What are you guys doing? Oh, we're fucking, Alex. What do you think we're doing?
Maybe. But look, the real thing is, like, in this next clip, as Alex is talking about this, it becomes clear that the only thing he's taking this from is his family members telling him this, which I don't trust.
Well, I talked to some family that works in the biggest VA hospital, one of the biggest in the country. I'll just leave it at that. And she said we had one old guy that had it. He's fine. They locked everything down. And basically everybody's drinking and partying. But, oh, we're all still victims. And my wife's reading me these text messages, and I'm just like, this is ridiculous. So then I talked to some other family that works in a big hospital. And he's a doctor, and he was just like, no, it's like Animal House. I said, yeah, so the drinking, partying, the nurses and the doctors are, one of the most, let's just say, loose groups is doctors and nurses. It's like
a
porn movie, folks. I mean, people know about medical stuff. That's what goes on in these hospitals. And so it is just party time. And it's like, oh, they're so tough. They're so incredible. Most of these hospitals are doing elective surgeries, and it's still a tough job when you've got a lot of work to do. They're all happy because there's nobody in there. I mean, it's just the hoax of hoaxes.
This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
So the function of this that Alex is taking from these very dubious places, this information,
yeah.
The function of it is to argue that these medical workers, like the ones you saw standing in the crosswalk opposing these protesters, these Alex Jonesy ass protesters. The reason that they are fighting back against the open the country back up folks is because they're having too much fun fucking.
They're having too much fun, Dave.
I'm not kidding. That's Alex's narrative.
Yep.
But that's why the medical workers are coming out saying to the people, saying, open things up, going, how dare you? We're not opening up. There's a party going down inside. If the house is a-rocking, don't come a-knocking. Come on in. God bless you, sir. I appreciate your call, Kenny.
Look at this stupid fucking asshole. Like, that's the level of thinking that he's bringing to this. These doctors love fucking and taking pills. They're having a great time inside these. They're secretly having orgies in these hospitals, and that's why they want the economy to fail, so they can keep fucking. They can fuck when they're off time. They don't need this to fuck.
I just can't, like, I don't think Alex actually believes that.
No.
Absolutely not.
Not a chance.
But there are people listening to Alex who are saying to themselves, that sounds true. Which means they think the entire medical profession is willing to
do a global hoax,
sacrifice everybody's fucking life so they can fuck in a hospital.
Yeah,
that's it. That's somebody who believes that.
That's what we got here.
Think about how fucking awful that is.
Yeah,
that is so awful.
Very stupid.
That's just awful.
Yep. So Alex complains about vaccines, of course. They're going to be a nightmare. They're already a nightmare. And then this goes exactly where you'd expect it to.
And as they reported, some of these vaccines have the whole human genome in them.
What?
So, yeah, this is a nightmare.
What does that even mean?
Scenario from hell. But, hey, at least all the sneaking around's over. The New World Order is out in the open. They're going to send pedophiles convicted to your school to bounce your kid on their knee. They're going to track you with drones. They're going to forcibly inject you. They're going to make your job obsolete and put you in forced labor brigades. It's all being announced. Because Thomas Jefferson was asked once in a letter by a member of the Virginia legislature.
Hey, you ever fucking a hospital?
What is the limit of tyranny man will accept? And he said, is the limit to which you will accept. Tyrants will always override the next tyrant. There's no limit to the black hole.
That's a fake Thomas Jefferson quote. That was actually a Frederick Douglass quote that Alex is just repurposing.
Yep.
So we have one last thing here on this episode. I don't believe that the 22nd is nearly as interesting as the 21st. There's a little bit of stuff in it. And I might not have really been as interested in covering it because of the psychodrama on the 21st is certainly far more interesting to me. Alex is just like, he also, one of the reasons that I decided to include both of these episodes is because you can see how different his mood is from day to day.
Yeah.
The fuck this, I hate this show, this is stupid, we all deserve to burn on the first day. And on the next day, InfoWars is usually just coming in, clock, hitting the clock, accusing doctors of having this conspiracy where they just want to fuck and are scamming Medicare money.
God damn it.
Right.
Oh.
And then the second reason that I decided, like, I'm going to cover this episode is because something that Alex says at the end is very important.
The attorney general, it looks like Barr more and more is real. It would take hours to go into how he keeps doing the right thing. He keeps saying the right thing. Trump trusts him. I trust Trump. Barr calls stay-at-home orders house arrest.
So now Bill Barr has said something that Alex likes. So it looks like he's a good guy. How fun is this game? Who could forget Alex's show from February 14th when he and Steve Pachenik were begging for Trump to fire William Barr because Barr had come out to say that Trump tweeting things about the DOJ's recommendation for Roger Stone's trial and sentencing was not cool. They were on the warpath, and Alex even went so far as to bring up the fact that there is a Jeffrey Epstein connection with William Barr.
We know that Attorney General Barr has really come out against the president. Some people are saying that it's elaborate theater, kabuki, and that it's to get Democrat heat off the attorney general for saying don't sentence Stone to an exorbitant amount of time.
Yeah, no shit.
Well, Dr. Steve Pachenik is a smart guy, and he does know a lot of people in the deep, deep state. Not the lawyer bureaucracy, but you know the folks in the military and those areas.
All the lieutenant colonels.
He really has a big problem with Barr. And he particularly wanted to come on the show today. So I told him anytime he wants to come on, there's an open door. He thinks Barr needs to resign, and he thinks Barr is going to make a move on the president. And I tend to agree with him because of the pedigree of Barr. You know, Barr is up to his eyeballs in Jeffrey Epstein stuff.
It's up to his eyeballs and Jeffrey Epstein stuff.
Up to his eyeballs and Jeffrey Epstein stuff.
The list of reasons why Alex should super fucking hate William Barr is a very long one. ProPublica reported back on April 15th that Barr was specifically blocking 9/11 victims' families from access to FBI files that Trump had, quote, promised to open, saying that even discussing why he can't release these files would be a threat to national security. For someone like Alex, who made his career on 9/11 conspiracy theories, this should sound a whole lot like someone engaging in a cover-up. But no. He's Trump's attorney general, so Alex doesn't even bring the story up.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Hey, it's looking like he's real, Dan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There's plenty of examples about this, why Alex should hate him, but this one's particularly funny for me. Alex's primary identity in his early career was a 9/11 truther, and that's being completely subjugated to his need to be a blind Trump follower. It's really sad to see where this road he's on has led. It's led to a repudiation and rejection of self. Oh, also, William Barr was the attorney general under George H.W. Bush during the Ruby Ridge standoff, which is one of the earliest inciting incidents of the Patriot Militia movement in the 90s. In his questionnaire that he had to answer for his Trump confirmation, Barr says, quote, I spent approximately 80 hours organizing amici briefs, including former attorneys general, to support an FBI sniper in defending against criminal charges in connection with the Ruby Ridge incident in Idaho. I enlisted a law firm to work pro bono on the case and assisted in framing legal arguments advanced in the amici in the district court and the subsequent appeal in the Ninth Circuit. That sniper that he helped defend was the person who shot Randy Weaver's wife while she was holding her infant child.
Yep.
William Barr should be a villain of the highest order to Alex, but fuck that noise. He's down with Trump, and he recently said something useful for Alex. So it looks like he's real after all.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Alex is a spineless, principleless pile of shit.
Yep.
And for all the reasons that he needs to be off air for his own effect that he has on the public and how he's a danger to people, he also needs to be off air for his own good. He is exactly the opposite of what he pretends to be.
Yeah.
He pretends to care about all this patriot right-wing world, and even according to that, he's a fucking sellout piece of shit.
Yep.
So go fuck yourself, Alex. You should be telling yourself that you're a pile of shit. You should be looking in the mirror and really wrestling with the fact that you're defending William Barr. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You're pretending to have any connection to that militia world. If he had even a kernel of it, he would never be able to. And the entire time that there's been this will they, won't they with William Barr, it should have always been won't.
Yep.
It should have always been. That should have been disqualifying. The second that fucking Trump said, I want William Barr to be my attorney general, it should have been like, I'm out. Fuck this.
Yep.
I know this guy because you know what? The FBI are the villains of Ruby Ridge. And you know who the FBI reports to? The fucking attorney general who runs the Department of Justice, William fucking Barr. I'm sorry. I'm getting a little animated.
You're nailing
but
it.
But like Alex, like his entire existence is such a rejection of that which he pretends to be and reality.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're done. You're done. You've done your work, what you thought you were doing, Alex, and now you have disgraced yourself. You've become the villain, even to your own villainous world.
It's almost like this show is terrible, and every moment he does it is torture.
Hey, to quote Thomas Jefferson. Yep. So this show actually ends with Alex has an interview with Andrew Torba from Gab.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really funny because Alex says he has a massive, huge announcement. And his massive announcement is that he hates Zoom and that Gab is coming out with their own version of Zoom.
Ugh.
But it's not done yet. It'll come out eventually.
It's called Goom.
It's called On.
No.
So he has this interview with Andrew Torba, and it's very boring. It's about something that doesn't exist yet.
And it probably won't.
And then Alex says that David Knight's coming up, and I was like, click.
Yeah.
So
fuck this.
That brings us to the end of this.
Oh my God.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, in the immediate future. But I would not be surprised to see Alex at least take the rest of this week off, you know, take Friday, probably Sunday off. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I will be keeping an eye on it.
Sometimes
and, look out because you know what?
They're coming for your balls.
Look out. So we'll be back as the year of the seltzer marches forward.
Of course.
And as promised at the beginning of the show, I have a rating for the limoncello.
What's that?
80 out of 100.
80 out of 100?
Yes, it's
You're
very good.
You're giving it that?
It's really
Whoa,
good.
Oh, wow.
It continues to be good as you as you drink.
All right.
Still lower than the cherry coffee, but yes. I think it's mostly the surprise aspect
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, cherry coffee. Also, yeah.
And I had a, I had another one of those cherry coffee ones, too, and it was it was still good.
Still good?
Still good.
Came
but
back
I,
for
am,
more.
I am excited because I do have more of the limoncellos.
Okay.
And I'm excited that it wasn't a one-off.
All right.
Drink some more of those.
Okay.
Be good. We'll be back with more seltzer ratings and more Alex Jones bullshit. But then we have a website.
We do have a website.
Where I will be posting all of the
You will not.
Seltzers.
We're going to put a new page on there.
I might.
I think that's an idea. Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, our website is knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
Yes, it is at @knowledge_seltzer and Seltzer Jordan.
We got to get those handles.
Yeah.
Also on Face Seltzer.
Indeed. And if you'd like to download the show, please go to iSeltzer, rate, leave a review, go to our Seltzer page. And if you want, donate to a local charity of your choice.
Yeah. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I am the return of Old Man House Phone.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.